but it's real life. And this is real ammunition. So these are real drugs, real patients, real doctors, real everything.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, last one was a real app, but it was, we agreed up front, we were always going to stick with fake data. In
right.
part because, Merck could see Pfizer's data, Pfizer could see Merck's data. Everyone was happier with fake data.
Okay.
In this case, we're working with one medical center, one drug, all inside a covered entity. So we don't have to worry about that stuff as much.
Okay.
Cool. It's real world. So, it's fun.
Curious to see how it all goes.
We are too. And, obviously we're competing, quote unquote, with a lot of other people, but we view ourselves as really the only group that's tackling the last mile.
Okay. So that's how you differentiate from the rest of your competitors?
Yeah. It's just you and I on the call, but, I don't know how much excitement there's going to be at the FDA if the Merck warehouse has Merck drug in it.
Right.
Like the shock would be if that weren't true.
Right.
So again, I'm sure Merck has got a lot of stuff to do inside of its own warehouse.
Right.
But if you're talking about UCLA, you're talking about being way down the supply chain and then all the way to the doctor. It's a long ways down there.
Right.
So a lot of stuff could have happened between the beginning and the end. And in fact, we're a little bit surprised at how old the drug is that comes to UCLA. How old the drug is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been banging around the system for a while, a good long while.
Huh.
Yeah. This is not the world's fastest supply chain.
No, right. Interesting.
Yeah, so when you see drug that's been banging around for the better part of a year, you're like, okay, this could have been a lot of places.
Right. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, topics, when I was looking for our update, there's an upcoming conference, October 9th, 8th and 9th. In Boston. I'm not sure if you heard about it. It's the Blockchain for Health Supply Chain.
Have not.
Yeah. So you have actually a large group of from different parts of the health and pharma and life sciences industry. I don't know if you have any, or have you worked with MetaLedger yet or looked at it at all?
No. I mean, we view them as sort of a competitor. This guy, Bob Celeste, I know Sturdivant. And what is this again? This is health supply chain. So this is the commercial supply chain. Yeah.
It's a conference, Blockchain for Health Supply Chain, real world application.
Who's sponsoring this?
I don't know. Here's the website. Let me see here. Actually, I have it up, here somewhere.
Yeah, I see it there.
Okay. Yeah, I put it. Here's the website. I actually have it. There you go. I'll just bring it up here. Sponsor. It looks like. Well, this is Bob Celeste. He runs this, right?
Yes, and he's the guy that we talked to. He's part of the FDA study.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I reached out to him to see if he can do a presentation on this call on what they're doing as well. And I checked out the website. In fact, it was one of the topics I had after this was there's two white papers, the value of blockchain and its application to the DSCSA and the Drug Supply Chain Security Act and blockchain. So, I haven't read those yet, but that was like the second topic I was going to bring up to see if anybody had any connections or insight. So I reached out to him. Hopefully he'll respond back and want to jump on and just kind of give a FYI. And if that happens, I'll be sure to let people know beforehand. So we can plan around it. I personally had an actual discussion with MetaLedger. And just trying to understand what they're doing. They're very, it seems like they are active, obviously, and I think they went live in May, from what I was reading. And they're trying to get into contracts as well, contract management.
I have no idea. I mean, I've heard a lot. It's hard to tell, separate the fact from the fiction there.
Yeah. And, you know, I was trying to get a more detailed technical understanding of how they were doing it, like blockchain and, you know, the technology. And I didn't really get as much as I'd like in my discussions, but they're working with the, you know, the big suppliers and you know, I work for a mid-market consulting firm, and they weren't really, I guess, to try to provide more information, they were kind of, the representative was holding the cards close to the chest. You know, we don't work with the big guys, but we work with the middle market, the life sciences and pharmaceutical companies that work with the big guys. And, you know, the consumers and doctors and hospitals and lobby. So just wanted to get a better understanding of how it worked and what their model is. And it looks like they're taking it slow, or they're trying to move as fast as they can based on what their limitations are at the moment. So which I don't know all the details of, like what challenges they're facing, if any. But what I did gather is that they are using the GS1 standard. The back end is Ethereum, which surprised me why they're using Ethereum, unless they're using like a fork of Ethereum, kind of like Quorum is. In that the nodes are hosted at the, you know, at the participant level, and or it could be another third party on behalf of the participants in the network. So that's pretty much the extent that I learned from them.
Yeah, I mean, that squares with what I know. They've pushed a lot of ideas, and I think that what they've been able to pull off, which is nice, is they've gotten the whole supply chain somewhat engaged. I think that the problem that they've got is that the wholesalers have all the power.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've basically tried to reflect that in their work. And right. So as a result, I don't know that there's any value being created.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I guess that, you know, I wonder if the reason why they got acceptance is because they came in and gave, you know, designed it for the big companies.
It's not about the big companies. I mean, the pharmas are, I think, very disadvantaged, and I think they continue to be disadvantaged.
Okay.
And so if you think about the MediLedger project, it's a little bit, you know, TraceLink was a predecessor idea. And in each case, pharma cannot see what the wholesalers hold.
Right.
And so, you know, when you've got that, you know, it's interesting to figure out how that's all going to work. So yep. Right now they're focused on chargebacks. And the idea is, if you're a wholesaler and you have a bunch of bad expired drug, you'd like to send it back to the manufacturer and get your money back. And I don't know exactly why you would need blockchain to do that, but I understand the concept.
I mean, the blockchain would ensure the accuracy of that, but it does. Don't they? I mean, there's a winner in having no or poor accuracy in that, right?
I think what they're trying to do, if I had to guess, they've never said this, is the following. So Marco's sitting on, you know, 5 cases of old Viagra. He wants to trade it in and get credit for it. And Pfizer doesn't really want it back in Puerto Rico. So if you could somehow cross it off and destroy it on site and get credit, that would be a plus.
The
problem with these guys is, and this is where MetaLedger comes in, I don't know exactly how you could prove that you destroyed it just using blockchain.
Right.
Because a little bit of an I said so kind of thing.
Right. Well, unless they repackage it, let's say they do something nefarious where they resell it on the black market and they redo the packaging. I guess if there is some, they serialize the containers and upon scanning, let's say they use the same bottles, whoever is the recipient of that, if they try to put it onto the MetaLedger blockchain, they're probably kicked back and saying that this is counterfeit or suspicious or something like that.
That's true. And so what they would probably do is either re-sticker it or ship it to Egypt or someplace where it's not going to get scanned.
Right. So it doesn't eliminate that from happening, but it creates more walls, I guess, in the main supply chain.
Yeah, it's a little bit of work. It'd be interesting to see if anybody goes for it or not.
Yeah.
It's certainly not the real goal. And so that's why I think the FDA came back with this DSCSA approach of trying to get everybody to sort of compete again on the basic idea.
Right.
So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. So it looks like they'll go over MetaLedger in this conference on their contract and charge backs process, what FedEx is doing. Let's see, improving drug accessibility. I don't know. Well, I've heard of Remeda chain. I just don't know much about it. I don't know if you heard anything about that. Let's see, the KGAA developed blockchain security feature that benefits the supply chain. Not sure about.
That's for Germany. I don't know. And then Amerisource is another one of the FDA pilots.
Right. And interoperability, which is another interesting topic as well. There's just a bunch of more speakers here. So yeah.
Yeah, I think what they're all about on this interoperability is basically proving that they can federate a couple of different databases, whether they're blockchains or not.
Right, right. Yeah, so let's see here. The interoperability, I saw it here somewhere on what the topics were. Here we go. Analyze why businesses need the universal interoperability of public networks, but with the privacy of private networks. Okay. Understanding that permission distributed ledger technologies typically use isolated networks for business applications, and these are unable to interoperate. How to maintain master data to allow interoperability to occur. What happens in an MNA situation with blockchain technology transfer. Exploring how multiple applications can run on an open shared network. So looks like they'll...
Yeah, so GS1 has got one foot in the blockchain camp. And they really don't want a single blockchain solution because nobody needs them then.
Yep.
Because they're all about using the GS1 standard across all databases. Right. So they do better when everybody has their own.
Yeah. So if I see this just from from my perspective, it's GS1 coming in saying, hey, you can achieve or accomplish, one check that you have to go through for interoperability, and that's having a consistent data model. So if you adopt our standard, then no matter what the solution is for blockchain, if it's GS1, you've identified a standard model across both.
Which is true. I think the challenge for GS1 and for TraceLink and anything that's gone before is they've never addressed this issue of double counts.
Mm.
So of course, everybody has the same GS1 barcode and you just keep recycling it again and again. You only need one to put your counterfeit Viagra up on the network.
Right.
And then, as long as it's GS1 compliant, it doesn't really matter, whether there's one unit or 500 units exactly the same.
Right.
And so, where they are between us girls, and we've talked to them quite a bit, is, they're really wrestling with this issue of can they get beyond the barcode where they've traditionally lived and put something together that's a little bit more, you know, of a true data standard.
Right.
It's hard for them. But on our, I don't mind telling you that on our clinical supply side, we stuck with XML, no barcodes. And
XML, you mean like on the format of the transfer?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that IBM Food Trust does that too. They use XML for and they use GS1 standard as well. So they use the EPSIS model.
Yes. So net, they're supportive of that. And so that's a step for them. I think that's been a pretty big step. But, you know, there's a long ways between that and a real blockchain data model.
Right. Yeah. And I haven't looked much into BITA yet.
Into what?
Into BITA. Let me actually see if I can find it here. BITA, BITA. A blockchain for, let me see if I can do a quick search. Blockchain and Transport Alliance. They're trying to also define a data model, from what I understand, standards.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
Yeah.
So that in a way that can't happen, but I understand where they're going with it. They're a little bit hamstrung in the same way that GS1 is, but essentially, you know, like people don't really want FedEx to know what's inside the box.
Right. Yeah, of course not. But with that in mind though, I mean, like in Fabric, you can have a private data collection where even though you can persist a transaction with all participants, you can define specific participants that can actually see that data.
Yes, and that's what we do with the clinical supply side.
Okay.
So UPS was one of our partners in that, and they were totally good with it.
Okay, cool. So, yeah.
And the BITA guys are more about, you know, the shippers trying to get a little bit more over on everybody else. And again, you know, I don't see that happening.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So this is taking place in October. I'm going to actually see if I can make it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You're based out of Orange County?
What's that?
You're based out of Orange County?
No, I'm in Connecticut. So I'm literally an hour and a half from Boston. So I'll just drive up and check it out if I'm available.
Cool.
If not, I'll have one of my guys go. So whatever I find out about it, I'll report back. And then the other thing I was talking about, the Center for Supply Chain Studies, I reached out to Bob Celeste here.
He's got a finger in a lot of pies.
Yeah, and it looks like the website has not had much activity since 2018.
Yeah, I think he, between us girls, and I don't know how he likes to think about this stuff, but he is part of a consulting firm that's actually advising the FDA on certain things. But it's got a different name now.
Okay.
And so I'm not really sure what's going on. But he does, like I said, he's been at this because he was at GS1 before that.
Right.
So, again, he's one of these guys who, you know, I don't know that he's that deep into the blockchain stuff, but he's really been all around the FDA and GS1 for forever and ever.
Yeah, I noticed that even though it's the Center for Supply Chain Studies, it pretty much all the contents are oriented around the DSCSA and pharmaceutical industry.
I think it's been a gold mine for people because you know, DSCSA is something people have to do, whereas all this other stuff that people talk about is people stuff that people want to do.
Right. Right.
And, you know, I can never really tell, like, the food safety stuff, which I'm very interested in, you know, I haven't seen anything that makes any real sense yet. You know, IBM's got this theory that you're going to use lasers on raw wheat and then you're going to know it's the same, you know, flour that went in the bread. And boy, I'm just not smart enough to figure out how that works.
But, yeah, I haven't heard of that. I mean, I know they have food trust and I know they're coming out with some additional functionality.
Think about what they're saying when they claim it's food trust and it's going to be organic. And IBM is this whole commercial where you have tomatoes and then you turn it into tomato sauce and then you know it's legit. Have you seen this?
No, I have not.
You've got to see it. I mean, it's a mystery. I mean, it's a cool concept, but it's like, that's still like 20,000, you know, 2050 kind of thinking.
Right. No, I understand. They try to just present themselves that, hey, we're thinking about the future already.
But so. Again, I mean, to know that the problem with the tomato concept is like, let's say you and I are both farmers and we both start with the same tomato seed and it has the same DNA and I have an organic farm and you have a regular farm. You know, you can go all the way down to a DNA test and you're still not going to find out whether it was an organically grown tomato or not.
Yeah, that's true. The DNA doesn't determine whether it's organic or not. It just determines the species and the I guess just the plant, right?
Right. And so net, when they start talking all this crazy stuff about how you're going to know all this stuff, and they in Walmart start talking crazy and rhapsodically about how this is all going to happen, you know, at the core, you just have to ask yourself, you know, if Ben's got the organic farm and things are going well for him and he gets an order for some more tomatoes and he's out, doesn't he call Marco and get a couple pallets from him? Right? Yeah. Hose him down and sell him for $5 instead of $2.
Yeah. Right now it seems though the usage of IBM Food Trust is for that scenario where if there is a recall, they can do a quick recall or they can trace it more quickly. So it's not like the intent was to be used for every transaction, but more specific cases around tracing for contamination or whatever. So I know IBM's trying to add additional functionality. I talked to them last week. That's coming down the pipeline. But right now, I mean, I looked at it. I've had a couple presentations on it direct with IBM. It simply is a cool interface on top of a blockchain network. And they use the GS1 standard. And they have APIs to abstract all that. And they just present it nicely and visually in this cool diagram where you can see, hey, this product went through these facilities and these organizations. And they, you know, they support aggregation, deaggregations, transformations, all different types of EPSIS events. I'm not too sure as to what extent it's being used in production. I've heard people say it's not. And I've heard IBM say that they have like over 100 participants using it in production. So I'm not sure the actual.
I don't know either. All I know is I think that in the case of that sort of thing, Walmart and Costco and Amazon are the retailers that are strong enough to make their vendors eat it if it gets recalled. And everybody else just hopes the problem goes away.
Yep. I know Albertsons is also pretty serious about it too. They're trying to get their vendors on it, their suppliers.
Yeah, I don't know. I could find out more about that. But again, I got some peanut butter the other day, 6-pack of peanut butter from Amazon, and I'm a good customer, and 4 of them were broken. Ooh. And I called them up, and they were just like, oh, we'll give you credit for the whole thing. We're just going to make this dude eat all six. You just eat the two. Don't worry about it. Right. And so that's Walmart. I mean, that's Amazon. They can do that.
Yeah.
Because if you want to be on the Amazon network and you send out a package and four of them break, they're going to make you, you know, make you think twice about that.
Right. Yep.
But again, not everybody can get away with that.
Right. Yeah. It's, you got Walmart, the big guys that can really push their demands of what they expect for their suppliers. And, you know, they're going to have to just go along with it if they want to continue to be suppliers to Walmart.
Yes. But it's interesting. And then the other thing that you're pointing out is also super interesting. These guys at GuardTime are very much like you were saying about MediLedger.
Yep.
You know, it's a closed system. It's not a real blockchain.
Yeah.
It's not, that one's not even a blockchain. They do a great job for a foreign company, they do an amazing job of getting American government dollars.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. I was curious about that because they've been around for a while. They said they're already working for the, you know, it's being used for the Estonian healthcare sector.
Yeah, these are some Estonian mathematicians who invented a cryptographic technique which has some similarity to blockchain but isn't blockchain.
Right. Yeah. And I read it on the news and it doesn't really go in depth as to what it is. They just say the HSX health platform. And I just reading, I was like, is this even blockchain? But it sounds like from what you know, it's not.
No, it's very, very clever. But I don't know if you've looked at some of these hash graphs or hash calendars, which are like a different kind of approach.
Yeah, I've heard of some hash graph technology, yeah.
So GuardTime is more in that phylum,
right,
of specialty hashes that are chained together.
Right.
And so it's not a standard notarization scheme like blockchain.
Is it distributed?
I don't know that it has to be. It can be, I think, in some respects. But again, they're mostly running government systems where I don't know that it really matters.
Right.
You know, so, but GuardTime's more selling the dream of total immutability and total control as opposed to, you know, really being able to use it for anything.
Right. And I wasn't sure if, you know, even though in Estonia they're using their platform, in the article it did talk about blockchain and specifically. So I don't know if they were trying to develop or are working on a new product that is blockchain based.
No, I don't think so. I mean, these guys are mathematicians. They're professors at an Estonian university, and they've invented their own database model.
Okay.
So that's what they do. They're very, very smart people, and I respect them, but it's interesting that they've been able to rebrand it a blockchain when it's not. But
yeah,
they do a good job of really marketing to the agencies. But to your point, you know, this whole technology and the company predates blockchain by a fair amount.
Right.
But it doesn't make it a bad thing. It's just different.
Right. Well, it's a bit of a reality check. Yeah, it's good to know the truth there.
Well, again, I don't know that there ever will be a real truth. The other truth is that Estonia is like the size of like New Haven.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a lot of, interesting ideas coming out of Estonia, like they want to move their entire all the citizenship on the blockchain, and like they're I guess they're small enough to think like that, like they can just use a new technology and then put everybody on it.
Well, I think there's two factors. One, like Singapore, they're very small and kind of centralized, but two is, you know, they were part of the Soviet Union, so they've had to build all their own systems
mm-hmm.
in the last 10 or 15 years to catch up with the rest of the world. And so right. You know, it's nice when you don't have to reinvent, you know, everything. They just started from scratch.
Yeah.
So I think they've done a very nice job. And they've got a lot to be proud of in Estonia to have left the Soviet Union and have all these cool things going on. But I don't know that there's any learnings for the U.S. government, for the U.S. healthcare system, or anybody else. I mean, it sounds good, but... you know, we look through all that stuff. We've competed against them a few times, and it's a whole different deal. It's a little bit like MediLedger, where in the short run, I think they offer some attractive ideas that sort of candy coat certain things, but it really doesn't offer the open source benefits that a Hyperledger-based system would offer.
Right.
So in other words, with Hyperledger, you know that everything to a certain depth in the stack is open source, and you know that people have had a chance to review it.
Right.
And that there's no backdoor built in there to be able to see that.
Yep.
And no funny business. So all those are all the sort of things, the values that you get from the Hyperledger system. And you also get them to a certain extent on Ethereum. But to your point, once it's forked, then you really don't know.
Right.
So it's certainly interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thanks for that input on guard time. I was curious about that.
No, I think they're good people. It's just not blockchain.
Yeah. So I don't know what EY is necessarily doing blockchain wise, unless they're trying to incorporate blockchain with them. And I don't know.
I think if you're EY and you get $50 million, you'd run.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I put this link here. So there's this $49 million bucket that they have, I guess, numerous contracts, and EY being one of them, and guard time as well being another.
Say that one more time now.
That it's $49 million of a total amount that's being given away, but it's multiple participants, and EY is one of them, but guard time is also another participant in that. They got awarded as well in that $49 million. So EY has theirs, so does guard time, but coincidentally EY, SenseSign Health, and guard time are also engaged in a partnership. So there is this dual relationship. I think EY has subcontracted with guard time on these things.
Yeah. So guard time is not an American company. And so they have to go through somebody to do something like this.
Yeah.
And so probably EY is the prime or something like that.
Yep. That makes sense.
But you know, again, you would know a lot more about that part of the world than I would.
Yeah, no, it sounds familiar. We're smaller than EY, but it's the same idea.
Yes.
We try. The difference is we don't really subcontract out. We usually just do as much as we can internally. Okay. Yeah. So then, you know, I was doing, you ever heard of Change Healthcare?
I mean, I've heard the name.
So it's about 70% owned by McKesson, and also Blackstone Private Equity. It's a dual venture. If they were to go IPO, I think they're valued now around $12 billion or when the time I read this. Again, I don't know what type of blockchain it is. They're saying blockchain, but you never know. It could be a guard time blockchain, but, they say they process about 30 million transactions per day. I don't know if that's true or not, because it's a lot of transactions and I have not seen those metrics on any blockchain, at that level. So I'm curious to see the reality of that statement, if it holds true or not. But it is nonetheless interesting, and what they're trying to do is innovate. So basically what Change does, they act as a clearinghouse for insurance claims, with the healthcare providers and insurers and clients. So they're that clearinghouse in between, and they're processing all these transactions. So the idea is, and this is the use case that they're trying to solve, is to reduce fraud, inaccurate billing, and also increase the, you know, expedite the process of billing. So here I just outlined some benefits I noticed in discussion that I was reading. So for example, potential reduced response time to a matter of minutes for routine medical checks like mammograms, which then if that's quicker to do the response time, then in other words, the hospital can get paid sooner. So I guess that's the value that a hospital will get if they want it to participate, or if they do participate. Right now it takes about 7 to 14 days to get results from an eligibility check to find out if a procedure will be covered by insurance. The idea is to reduce that time significantly. That's better for the patient as well. Also, their vision is to provide patients with digital identity, like a relic-like experience powered by blockchain, so patients will be able to see all the payments and medical events, creating a more positive interaction with the insurer. I mean, I don't know how any different that is now.
Well, I think so here's my sense of what's going on. So there was a company that McKesson owned called HBO and Company.
Mm-hmm.
They were out of Atlanta. And it was the biggest all-time fraud in the history of software. So they had to take a massive write-down on that. And they, in turn, merged that with Change, the old Change, which was originally called MDON. It was owned by WebMD.
Oh.
So it's WebMD's hospital software and McKesson's hospital software. They got mashed together.
I see.
And then they flipped it to the public recently, and the blockchain is just one of their marketing stories to tell about why they have a bright future. But I don't think they do any of that today. It's all.
I mean, that's what it is here. It's just, are you saying that Change is probably just a mishmash of those different products? And
yeah, so it's revenue management, it's a lot of different stuff. But I mean, what's weird about it, they're describing it, which is funny, but I mean, they sell it to the hospitals that they're going to get them more money with more codes, and
right.
I guess they sell it to the insurance guys that they're going to be an honest broker. I don't really know. It's a funny process, because I remember back in the old days, you know, their customers were the hospitals, not so much the insurance companies. But I mean, I think they do a lot of this paperwork for everybody. It's a big company.
Yeah.
It was a great stock in the 90s, but it turned out that the guy was not a good guy, and he went to jail.
Oof. Well.
It was really bad news. And McKesson had bought the whole thing, and it was a tough one.
Oof.
But again, you know, like everybody else, I think they're trying to sort of tell a fresh story.
But yeah,
for us, I mean, for us, since we're Hyperledger focused, you know, it's, I don't know if these non-Hyperledger people are going to be of much use to us.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if they are, like, if they're using Fabric or not in these technologies. That's always my curiosity is.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so far in all this list right here, and what I've seen, I have not seen anything or any technology that's in at least, I don't know, you're using Fabric, but I mean, like all these commercial ones and media, the ones that, you know, that have come up, like Meta Ledger in the media, they're not using Hyperledger Fabric. They're using other technologies like Ethereum or whatever else.
Yeah, I would say it's fairly clear. I mean, I'll just tell you a story. I don't mind sort of telling you what we do. But I mean, for us, we decided to commit to Hyperledger a while back. We're not a big enough organization to support 10 different blockchains. So we felt like this was the right one for us. IBM had already committed. And I think that, you know, there's a subset of people that are really into this stuff. And then there's a bunch of folks who are, even some of them on the board of Hyperledger that don't actually use it much.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. But I do think what's happened over the last 3 years is you've seen some turning. And a good example is Deloitte's was very Ethereum based. We saw them a lot. They were pitching Ethereum. And then when they started building stuff, they realized that they weren't getting the progress that they wanted. And so they seem to have moved on to specifying Hyperledger more often. We do not see them on the boards, though.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure. It's always hard to tell. A lot of people have, you know, a low profile, but I don't see a lot of these folks on the boards doing stuff.
Right.
So again, for us, you know, what we're trying to do is to, you know, share the good news that Hyperledger Fabric is working for us. For ourselves, we're mostly focused on delivering iPhone apps on top of it because we find that that's the easiest way to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep it clean. You know, it's been terrific. I do think that it takes a lot of, you know, practice to get that to work.
Right.
And so as we share the good news, what we try to tell people is, you know, you want to bite off what you think you can bite off. If you can do the iPhone app or a web app and talk to the blockchain, I think you can add a lot of value in this space because there's very few good client apps. And I think that there are other people like IBM and ourselves that can, you know, help with the infrastructure. Not everybody has to take down everything.
Right.
And yep. So, you know, it's an interesting angle, but, you know, I think it's a fun area, but it's taking a while to develop.
Yeah, it just seems we just need to wait to see how this all unfolds. But the good thing is it's, you know, the whole hype, even though there's still hype out there, it seems like I'm starting to see more and more applications, you know, more research and development. You know, there's all these different scenarios that they're addressing now. Like yesterday in our discussion, there's a, you know, like I think it was Oracle is working with this honey supplier to develop this, you know, blockchain for bees and honey. You know, stuff like that I'm starting to see more of. I mean, I think there's, you know, everyone wants to get on the bandwagon and have their name on it. But at the same time, they are trying something. They're doing something. Something's being done. So, you know, we're learning. And
yeah, I think Oracle's been super smart about focusing on crummy little areas that there isn't any application to net today.
Yeah.
And so they had a beer chain recently that I thought was really well done, really cute for like little cute, beer,
right?
Brewers. It wasn't for Budweiser. It was for craft brewers.
Yeah.
And I think it's very smart of them because it's a lot faster than having to argue with these bigger companies.
Yep. Yeah. And it's to get their name. I think a lot of it's just to get their name out. Here it is, the World Bee Project.
I love it. I think they're doing a great job. And I also will tell you, I think the Oracle guys are working very hard on the performance issues. And I think they're doing a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're really making it happen. So they're a real value add, I think, to the community.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything?
No, you're closer to New York or Boston?
I'm in between both.
Which town exactly?
I am in West Hartford.
Okay, got it.
Are you familiar with that, with West Hartford?
Very much so. Really? So what I'll do is if I get up to Boston or New York, I'll give you a shout. Maybe we can find a convenient spot for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, sure.
And I appreciate your time today. And hopefully we'll be in a position to say something intelligent.